श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय। श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय। श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय।
श्री श्री गौरांग राज श्री गुरु गौरांग राज गोविंद जी की जय।
गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि back, we had some
problem with the connection.
Now it is, yeah. Okay. So, pranam to all of you.
Good morning.
Welcome. Thanks for your invitation again, your presence here. And today we are continuing with our series on Sri Gaur Katha, Gaur Kathamrita, as Braja Devi is saying in the Gopi Gita, Tava Katamritam, Tapta Jeevanam. So to invoke Harikatha is in itself life-giving experience, which is creating relief for those jivas who are burning basically in the ocean of samsara. Although an ocean is not supposed to burn you, but here we are in flames. So Harikathamrita is that particular current that it's always new, it's always fresh, it's always updating itself. Tadeva ramyam ruchiram navam navam. Srimad Bhagavatam is saying, Manaso mahotsavam tadeva sashvam manaho manaso mahotsavam. So Harikatha is constantly worthy of being relished. It's always giving pleasure. It's always new. Navam Navam. It's always a festival for one's mind. Manasoma Hotsavam. So, we organize festivals, but actually the festival is Harikatha in itself. It's a festival. Sometimes we make something else, but actually the idea is to take our attention in the direction of Harikatha. Harikathotsav. Krishna himself, the Shastra is saying, his beauty is a festival for the eyes. So Krishna himself is a festival. So to speak about he who is a festival, is a festival. So in one sense, we don't need to officially organize a festival. To just open the mouth and say something about Krishna is in itself a festival. So it's important that we have this very, very present in our minds every time we gather for Harikathamrita. So today we will focus our celebration, if you will, our Mahotsav, in the direction of Sriman Mahaprabhu. We yesterday began a short series of lectures we will be giving today and next weekend on Sri Gaur Tattva. Yesterday we just brief review. Yesterday we shared some explanation on the famous verse Namo Mahabhadanyaya, which describes Mahaprabhu's Nama, Rupa, Guna and Lila, his name, form, attributes and pastimes. And then we try to unfold also a little bit the first verses in the Mangala Charan of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is gradually making his case for the divinity of Mahaprabhu and for the reasons that are bringing Sri Chaitanya Dev to manifest his lila, basically. Ultimately, that is to taste Radha Bhav, to satisfy these three desires. What's the experience of Sri Radha, her happiness? What's the beauty she's seeing in me? And what's the glory of her love, sorry? What's the beauty she's in me? And what's the happiness she's deriving from that? So richly endowed with her mood, with her complexion, as we say yesterday, Sachi Garbha Sindhu Harindu. Bhagavan, he appeared from the ocean-like womb of Sri Sati Devi. So today I'd like to continue playing out the implications of these notions in the context of Gaur Lila as a giver of Krishna Lila, as we mentioned, but also Gaur Lila as the gift unto itself, as a natural extension of Krishna Lila. So today I would like to begin offering some Pushpanjali Katha, as a mode of the way of offering at the feet of Gaur Tattva. To begin with, again speaking, Gaur Tattva, Gaur Lila is the giver of the gift. We can conceive it as such. Srila Siddhar Maharaj will mention that. First the giver, then the gift. So if we like to think about Krishna Lila as the gift, then Gaur Lila is the giver. And first we go to the giver. If someone gives you a gift, you will always remember who gave you that gift. So we can approach from that way, this direction. Then we try to honor a little bit the psychology of Vrindavan, if you will, the transcendental mood of the Brajavasis as the gift being given by Gaur. And then we will try to make full circle and share some words about how Gaur Lila is in itself actually the gift of Krishna Lila. Also, we can think of Krishna Lila as the gift of Gaur Lila, but there is a way to think about Gaur Lila as the gift of Krishna Lila, interestingly, as a gift unto himself. The most natural, organic extension of Krishna Lila, appearing in the form of Srimad Mahaprabhu and his divine pastimes. So again, as we mentioned yesterday, Gaur Lila is not a mere bridge towards Krishna Lila, but also a destiny, a goal unto itself. It has a life of its own, if you want to put it like that. It's not only the entrance gate to Braj, but it's also an access, eternal, permanent access. As I like sometimes to describe, Gaur Lila is like the chamber, you say? The chamber of Krishna Lila. We are celebrating actually the possibility of entering there as well, for eternity. The invitation is being given. But let's begin with the idea of Gaur Lila as a means to Krishna Lila. So this is famous verse by Srila Prabhudananda Saraswati, when he said, Yatha yatha gaura padara bindam bindekta bhaktim krita punya rasi tata tata sarpati hridya kashma radha padam bojas sudhambu rasi. Which basically means, the more you immerse yourself in gaura padara bindam, in the service of the lotus feet of Sriman Mahaprabhu, the deeper you go in that direction, the more you will find yourself in the service of the feet of Sri Radha. So this is a very famous verse when it is described how Gaur Lila, Gaur Katha, Gaur Seva is facilitating our attainment of Krishna Lila, Radha, Dasyam, and so on. So we know this is a very famous verse which points in this direction. Gaur Lila is the gate to Krishna Lila. But we also have a very interesting verse which basically presents another idea by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his Sarvabhauma Sataka, very well-known composition. Verse 18, he's saying, Yatha radha padam bhuje bhakti syat prema lakshanam tataiva krishna chaitanya bhardati madurarati. So he's saying, the amount of devotion that one has for Sri Radha, that amount in one increases one's devotion for the feet of Mahaprabhu. So he's presenting the other side of this story, if you will. The more you increase your bhakti, your service for Sri Radha, the more you find yourself increasing your service to Mahaprabhu. And the more you increase your service to Mahaprabhu, the more you increase your service to Sri Radha. And there's not one against the other. There's no competition here. But one is complementing and nourishing, full circle. So it's very important that that we learn to appreciate, of course, not only Braja Ras, but also Gaur Ras. The experience of Rasa as it appears in Gaur Lila. As I like to say, we are not racists. Not racists, but racist. You can be racist in the context of Rasa, and that makes you a racist. So we don't want here to say that. We don't want to think, okay, Braja Ras is the only thing and Gaur Ras is just something inferior. That makes you a racist. This is a higher thing and everything else, whatever. No? So we have to be always very careful not to disturb the world, this universe, this planet of different modes that are very delicate. So when we glorify something, we have to do it in a way that is tasty and everything and everyone else is duly embraced and glorified as well. So anyhow, let's begin with Mahaprabhu and Gaur Lila as the giver of the gift of Krishna Leela. So again, in one sense, Gaur Leela can be considered, as they say here, the pearly gates to Braj, the entrance point. Because we could say, well, in Gaur Leela we will find all this Nitya Siddha, Ragatmika, Brajavasis appearing as sadhakas, perfected sadhakas. All these eternal associates of Bhagavan Sri Krishna in Braj, now they are appearing in another Leela, Gaur Leela, as devotees, showing the way to Braj through their own achar, through their own example and practice. No, you have whatever, Rupa Manjari and Madhu Manga, whoever, they are there in the Braj as sadhakas. So you can imagine which type of sadhakas will they be, how nicely they will practice bhakti. So not only they will be practicing bhakti, not only all these eternal associates will come as sadhakas, perfected sadhakas, actually they are siddhas, but acting as sadhakas. But also God himself will appear in Gaur Leela as a sadhaka, as a practitioner, again, the most perfected possible one. So Krishna appears as a Vaishnava, if you will, in Gaur Leela. Krishna is generally the object of bhakti, but in Gaur Leela he is bhakta avatar, he is coming as a bhakta, as a devotee. He is endowed with the mode and the compassion of his greatest devotee, Sri Radha, basically. That's the meaning of Mahaprabhu. Krishna being in the mode of Radha means Krishna is in the mode of a devotee, the greatest one, of course. And that's why he can become, as we say yesterday, Mahavadanyavatar, Mahavadanyavatari. Because he's so compassionate, because he's endowed with Sri Radha's mood. Sri Radha is the compassionate side of Sri Krishna, if you want to put it like that. And as we mentioned, trying to unpack this verse, now Mahavadanyaya, he can be the most merciful because he's giving the highest thing, because he's tasting the highest thing to begin with. So I remember, as I told you yesterday, I was reading one of Srila Bhaktivedanta Narayana Goswami Maharaj's book on Mahaprabhu, the speciality of the gift of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he will speak in one section about 8 unprecedented distinctions of Gaur Hari. So I won't go into each of them, that may take lots of time, but I'd like to mention some of them in this connection. So one of them he's mentioning, it is said that no other avatar apart from Sriman Mahaprabhu bestowed bhakti upon all, like Gaur Hari did. Nobody bestowed that type of bhakti, that quality of bhakti, in that quantity of massive, if you will, indiscriminate distribution. So we don't find that anywhere. Sri Ramachandra blessed his devotees and with bhakti, Sri Krishna did in one way or another, but with, of course, due respect to all these forms of Bhagavan, none of them did that to the degree that Mahaprabhu did that. So in that sense, we have this speciality of Mahaprabhu's dispensation, if you will. And as we say yesterday, Prema rasa niryasa kurite ashvadan raga marga bhakti loki kurite prachana. He was tasting a unique form of prema rasa, and that allowed him to establish in the world the process to attain that experience called raga marga, raga nuga bhakti. And interestingly, the next verse to that one, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, rasik seka param karun. He refers to Krishna first of all as the topmost connoisseur of rasa, and then the most merciful person, Param Karun. Like we say yesterday, you cannot be the most merciful person if you are not giving the greatest thing, and you cannot give the greatest thing if you are not tasting the greatest thing to begin with yourself. So he's making these 2 points: Rasik Sekar, Param Karun. You cannot be Param Karun if first you are not Rasik Sekar, basically, and that implies that's Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu is Param Karun, but he's first Rasik Sekar. He's first tasting something unique, and that's what he's given, and that's what makes him Param Karun, Mahavadanyavatar, and so on. So again, extreme mercy from Mahaprabhu, but first extreme relishment, if you will. His extreme deep gift is backed by a very deep experience he's having, tasting Radhaba. Srila Narayana Maharaj is mentioning that in his book also. Again, he's known as Rasik Sekar, he's known as Param Karun, and he mentions, but he only becomes fully becomes that, he only becomes fully Rasik Shekhar, Amparam Karun, as Mahaprabhu, as Gaur Hari. And Krishna is also known as Rasik Shekhar, of course. Krishna is also known as Karuna Sindhu, Param Karun, and so on. But technically speaking, those two words fully apply to him when he appears as Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya Dev. When he's assuming the heart and halo of Sri Radha. Radha Bhava Dyuti Shivalitam Nomi Krishna Sarupam. So in other words again, Mahaprabhu is giving something unique. Yes. Because he's tasting something unique. So anarpita charim chira karunayavatirunakalu shamarpaitam unatash balarasam sabhaktisha. So he's given an unprecedented gift. It has not been given for a long time. But first he is fully relishing that, fully tasting that. So he's tasting Krishna's experience as Mahaprabhu, he's tasting Radha's madness, we could put it like that. He's tasting Sri Radha's Madanakya Mahabhav, basically, technically speaking. Interestingly, the word already in English is connected with the Sanskrit Mada. Mada means madness. I mean, well, in Spanish and English you say Mada also. She's tasting Madanakya Mahabhava. By Mahaprabhu tasting Radha's madness, he becomes basically mad himself. And in that divine madness, he starts to distribute something without any form of discrimination, if you will. And giving the highest, as we say yesterday, even to the lowest. This is intimately tied and connected with the very title of one of our main works, which is Srimad Bhagavatam. So if possible, I'd like to share some excerpt from my last book in that connection. You have one copy there. In this connection, a very interesting play of words that some of our acharyas have made in connection to the madness of Sri Radha and how that plays out in the form of Mahaprabhu. This is almost like the last, basically, page of the book, the very conclusion. So with your permission, I'll read just a few paragraphs. It says like this. The subtitle says Sri Gaur, the two Bhagavatas, and the jewels of Prem. It says like this. As has been shown, Braja Prem descends straight from Golok and approaches us in the most generous way through the agency of the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat, both ultimately personified in the figure of Sri Gaur Krishna and his compassionate agents, the sadhus. Their unrepayable dispensation could be compared to when a homeless person, by being in the right place at the right time, suddenly becomes rich without deserving it at all. Without such a stroke of good fortune, our attempts could be compared with trying to acquire the supramundane Syamantaka or Kastuba jewels by way of money, gold, or any other earthly gems. These jewels are rightfully enjoyed by Bhagavan and his entourage and can be experienced by ordinary people only through some close friend of theirs. Similarly, bhakti is like a great transcendental jewel, and apart from the causeless mercy of one of Bhagavan's nearest and dearest, the person Bhagavat, there is no other way to obtain that precious touchstone. Likewise, the book Bhagavat, which comes to us through the person Bhagavat, is not an exception to this rule, and its very name bears witness to this. As Gaudiyas embrace the Bhagavat according to how Mahaprabhu himself embraced it, the result of such an embrace has taken the form of a remarkable epithet, Srimad Bhagavatam. While the term Bhagavatam denotes something related or belonging to Sri Bhagavan, the esoteric term Srimad points to bhakti in its ultimate expression of personified Mahabhav, Sri Radha. This Mahabhav barely implies divine frenzy, which represents the definitive converging point of the whole Bhagavad. And in this way, Srimad refers to the madness or mad of Radha, Sri, in her loving interaction with Bhagavan Sri Krishna. And so Srimad means Sri, Sri Radha, mad means madness. Bhagavan, Bhagavatam refers to Bhagavan. This play of words was originally shared by Atul Krishna Goswami, a very important devotee and scholar from Radharaman tradition. Thus, we Gaudiyas also call Srimad Bhagavatam the Radha Bhagavatam. But such a concept begs for further development, which plays out in the very apex of the Bhagavat, in which Sri Hari contemplates Radha's Mahabhav and becomes greedy to taste it, thus giving rise to Gaur Lila. Here, Braja Krishna drenches himself in the glory of Radha's experience to such a point that her Mahabhav becomes his, her madness becoming his own. It is in the midst of this pandemonium that Sri Gaurasundar then relishes Radha's Mahabhav. But experience overflows from him, splashing whoever is nearby, including undeserving passers-by such as us. This is just like if the wife of a rich man goes mad and suddenly throws all her jewelry from her rooftop, making even the poorest of people rich, though they have no merit whatsoever. And when her millionaire husband sees this, he has no problem at all, since he knows the extent of his own wealth. Correspondingly, the Srimad Bhagavatam ultimately speaks to us about the mad of Sri for Bhagavan, in which all her jewels of bhakti are indiscriminately delivered in the madness of Mahabhav to one and all, in the topmost expression of compassionate love as Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Needless to say, we are those most fortunate redeemed paupers in this magical story. So basically, again, in this madness, continuing, it is that Mahaprabhu is giving prem without considering any qualification whatsoever. Krishna, in other forms, Krishna, for example, what does Krishna say in the Gita? Yatamam prapadante. As you approach me, I reciprocate. But Mahaprabhu is not saying that. He's giving everything even without approaching him. So, this is one of the two ways in which Krishna is breaking his promise in this verse of the Gita. One way, as we will see, is when he says to the gopis, okay, I say in the Gita I will reciprocate accordingly, but seeing the measure of your love, I think I cannot reciprocate. You have so much, I cannot reciprocate. So he's breaking his word in the Gita. But another way he's breaking his word in the Gita is like now. He's giving himself too much to people who is not approaching him accordingly. But that's first by tasting what Radha is about. No? So yeah, in other forms, prem will be given not so easily. Bhagavatam is saying, muktim dadati karhi chit manabhakti yogam. Krishna will give mukti relatively easily, but he does not give prem that easily. But that's speaking about Krishna. When we go to Gaur, there's another consideration there, basically. So Gaur Nityananda in particular, they are looking for those who have no adhikar whatsoever, as we were speaking yesterday. So that's our qualification for receiving their gift. Our qualification is the lack of qualification, basically. That's how Brahma is praying to Krishna very intelligently in the Brahma Stuti at one point. He's basically begging Krishna, give me your causeless grace, and I'm worthy of your causeless grace because I am so unworthy, he's saying. That's how it plays out. That's the logic of causeless mercy. I deserve it because actually I do not deserve it. I'm totally unworthy, and that makes me qualified to receive your mercy. So that's a very intelligent expression of humility, if you will. So in this way, Mahaprabhu's Srila Narayan Maharaj is mentioning in his work that Mahaprabhu surrendered to his Karuna Shakti as Gaur Avatar. He has his mercy-giving potency, and Bhagavan as Mahaprabhu is, I surrender to you. You do whatever you like, basically, in this particular Leela. I give you full freedom in Audarya Leela. You just distribute this without discrimination. And that's what's going on. That's how it's taking place. And Mahaprabhu, being so much empowered by this Karuna Shakti, he doesn't even need to kill any asura using any weapon that he does in another form. As we know, as Krishna has some weapons. He invokes Sudarshan here and there, sometimes four arms. And he kills a good number of asuras there's a good number of that. But Mahaprabhu hasn't killed one single person in his whole Leela, interestingly. He had killed the Asuric mentality, but he didn't need to kill anyone. And not even he did away with the demonic mentality, he conferred prem on top of that. And again, he didn't need to use any weapon. His weapons were his raised hands, basically. In this way, everyone was converted. He was so much empowered, in other words, by Sri Radha. So, he's empowered by her, he's adorned by her, he's ornamented by her hue and bhavas. We say Krishna sometimes is known as Bhushana Bhushanangam. Srimad Bhagavatam mentions that, which means the ornament of all ornaments. Sometimes we hear that Krishna has ornaments, but our acharyas will say different things about that. And one of them is, it's not so much that the ornaments are beautifying Krishna, but Krishna is beautifying the ornaments, because he's the ornament of all ornaments. So, interestingly enough, this ornament of all ornaments, Krishna, he's now been ornamenting himself with Radha's complexion and Radha's mood, Radha Bhava Dyuti Subhalita. So, a further ornamentation in the form of Gaur Hari. And also this Krishna, as Gaur Hari, as we know, the word Hari, as we say yesterday, Hari can mean lion. So may that lion roar in the cave of our hearts. But Hari also can mean, and maybe that's the most well-known meaning of the name. Hari means?
Someone takes away.
Yeah, in a more direct way, thief. No. So Krishna is known as a thief. I mean, it is said that that's the favorite name of everyone in Braj in general, to call Krishna Hari, because all of them have the experience how he's stealing so many things. I mean, Krishna is a real thief, accomplished one. He steals the gopis' butter, he steals the gopis' clothes, he steals even the clouds' complexion. He's taken from everywhere, not only on the earth, but goes to the heavens and taking something from the clouds. He's taken away one's sins, as we know. He's taken away one's wealth, as the Bhagavatam is saying, just yaham and ugrinam, and so on. For those I love, I'll take them, the wealth. Wealth means those things they are attached to, basically, so they can get fully attached to me. And so many other things. There's a very nice composition called the Chogra Ganya Ashtakam, which basically describes how Krishna steals everything that comes on his way. That's his vocation, if you will. So he's an accomplished thief, but we could say only as Mahaprabhu he was able to incur in his ultimate theft, which was to steal Radha's heart and to steal Radha's complexion. That only he did as Mahaprabhu. That's why we call also Mahaprabhu Gaur Hari, the golden thief. That's a way of saying that. Now, he stole so many things in Krishna Leela, in the Braj, but in Gaur Leela he's getting the ultimate treasure. He wants to take, no? Stealing Radha's bhava, stealing bhava's Radha's kanti, no? Mood and complexion, Gaur Hari. So he's a thief, he's a very good one, and as Srila Bhakti Rakakasya Dev Goswami said once, that's our hope. He said once nicely, our hope is that Krishna is a thief. And for this he shared one story, short one, nice one, we'll share it today, why not? And there were once two policemen in India, and the two of them were devotees of Krishna. So one of them is asking the other, do you know, I think maybe it's a problem that Krishna is a thief. Because, I mean, we are policemen, and we are worshipping a god who is a thief. So that may make our work complicated, because we are telling people, do not steal, do not do this, but our god is doing all those things. Of course, in a very unique way. But one devotee was wondering, maybe this is a problem. And of course, the other policeman, devotee, told him, no, that's not a problem, because Krishna is a thief, the best one. And a good thief, in the words of my Guru Maharaj, does not care for high walls or locked doors, but just goes to the, how do you say, objective.
Target.
The target, thank you. No. So a good thief doesn't care for all the obstacles that may be on the way. The target is in mind, and somehow or other, he will get there. And the police said, and those high walls and those locked doors are exactly the things that we have built around our hearts. Mm. But our hope is that Krishna is a thief. Somehow he will go through all of them and reach the target and steal our hearts. We have built so many things for that not to happen. But Krishna is so expert as a thief that he will get to the target. So our hope is that it's not a problem that Krishna is a thief. That's our greatest hope. Shriman Gaur Hari Ki Jai. So in this way, Mahaprabhu is the greatest thief, as we were mentioning. Krishna is his greatest moment of thievery. So these are some words in connection to Mahaprabhu and Gaur Lila as the giver of the gift of Krishna Lila, as the pearl gates, as the entry point through which we can get to Braj, to the Krishna Lila. So let's share then now some words about Krishna Lila, Braj Lila, as the gift that Gaur Lila is giving to us. So for this I'd like to go for a minute to one verse from the Bhagavatam, which has been considered by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur as a Parivas Sutra of the Krishna Lila. So Parivas Sutra means like a statement, short one generally, around which all other statements revolve. No. So there's one line, let's say in one book, and the whole of the book has to be seen in context to that line. We have that in the Bhagavatam, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swaya. This short line, Srila Jiva Goswami says, you have to read all the book in the context of that line. You have to understand all other statements. You have 18,000 verses more just in connection to that one line. And someone may ask, oh, that sounds kind of whimsical. Just one line putting everything else in context. I mean, how can you justify that? And someone like Srila Jiva Goswami say, okay, here you have Krishna Sandarbha. He wrote a whole treatise only about Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Whole book showing how actually in that line, which means in the words of Srila Prabhupada, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is the fountainhead of all phases of divinity. So many things. So everything is there basically. And everything is to be seen in connection with. That's the main point, if you want, of the Bhagavatam in terms of tattva. Krishna is the source even of Narayan, interestingly. So that's the Parivas Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam. This short line around which the whole Bhagavatam is to be understood. But then, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we have another Parivas Sutra of Krishna Lila, around which all the statements of the 10th canto, which describe Krishna Lila, are to be understood in the context of. So in that verse, it is Shukadeva Goswami saying, Traya Chupanishabdischa Sankhya Yoga Ischa Sattvatai Upakiya Manamahatmyam Harim Samanya Tatmajam. It's a very simple verse, but very deep. And in this verse 3, Sukadeva Goswami is saying, Sri Krishna is being seen by the Upanishads, by the yogis, by the different scriptures, Sankhya and so on. He's been seen as the ultimate absolute truth. But according to Yashoda, he is her son. That's this verse, his Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, all the descriptions of Krishna Lila are to be seen in connection to this verse, which basically means this is the psychology of Braj. Everyone else sees Krishna as God. Nobody in Braj sees Krishna as God. It's a very unique feature. Because you go to Shastra, you go to Upanishads, and they say, Krishna is the absolute, Krishna is Bhagavan, Krishna is this and that. You go to Vrindavan, go and ask Yashoda, what does she think about those statements? She'll say, no, he's my Lala. What about the absolute God? I mean, that's Prajalpa, she will say. For the Vrajavasis, this idea does not compute, as we say. When Uddhava went to Vrindavan and tried to deliver this type of siddhantic message in Braj, the Vrajavasis had no ears for that. When he suggested to Nanda Maharaj, maybe your son is God, you can imagine Nanda Maharaj's reply. He said basically, I worship God, I know who God is, Narayan, Vishnu. I worship him on a daily basis in my altar.
Narayan is peaceful, he's satisfied, self-satisfied, and Krishna is exactly the opposite. Krishna has so many desires, he's so mischievous. Whenever I do not give him what he wants, he starts crying, he starts making so many types of situations. He cannot be God. That's his way of, that's his Siddhanta. That's the Siddhanta in Vrindavan. That's what the Bhagavatam actually ultimately want to give us. So this is a very unique idea. Krishna in Vrindavan is not God. In Vrindavan, Narayan is God. Krishna is something else, not less. There is something above God, interestingly. As I like to say, Krishna is God beyond God. It's another way of saying the supreme personality of Godhead. That's the God we worship. The son of Nanda. That Krishna, Braja Krishna, Stu Bhagavan Swayam. So our Goswamis try to establish this idea over and over again in their Shastras. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Rasu Vaisaha, Malanama Sanyaninam Naravaram. So many verses. But they are trying to develop this notion of Braja Krishna. A very unique notion of divinity. A very unique attribute of the intimacy of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Again, they are not worshipping Krishna. They are loving Krishna and worshipping Narayan. The worship is to Narayan on the altar. Krishna is not on the altar in Vrindavan. Krishna is in the hearts. That's the altar ultimately, of course. That's why we worship in the altar. So someday the altar manifests here. And the more we advance in intimacy, of course, the more our worship will turn into what we call bhajan, into intimate seva. As we know from someone like, I don't know, Srila Sanatan Goswami, when he was worshipping Madan Mohan, that was a very unique standard of worship, if you want to call it like that. And Madan Mohan was asking things and speaking directly to him and asking him, do you have some salt to put on the offering? I mean, you are not expected to receive that. In the Archana Padati, it's not included that. If the deity asks you for salt, you are way beyond the handbook there. I mean, you already know what to tell him in reply. Sanatana Goswami knew what to tell Madan Mohan. And he knew. What did he tell? No, I don't have salt. I already told you from the beginning, this is the only thing I can offer you. And you agree. This was the terms of conditions. I told you, I will be able to offer you this bread without salt. If you don't like this, you can go somewhere else. That was Sanatana Goswami's reply. You don't find that in the Archana Padati. And of course, Madan Mohan said, no, it's okay. Let's continue with this without salt. I'd like to remain here with you. So someday our Archan has to convert into that. Someday the deity will start to ask you for salt. That's the goal of our worship, if you will. Someday, Shishirada Govinda will start speaking to you. I mean, they are already speaking to you. We are not hearing. It's not that they are not speaking. It's not that Krishna is not playing the flute. But we are not hearing the flute call, the clarion call. So it's about becoming aware of what's already happening. It's not that there's all lilas are not happening there in the altar, in the yoga pit. All that is taking place. But we are somehow distracted from that. So gradually the idea is to realize what's already taking place. So this is the unique psychology of the Brajavasis again. They love Krishna and they worship Narayan. But they worship Narayan only for Krishna's sake. So Nanda Maharaj is worshipping Narayan, he's engaged in, you may call it Vaidhi Bhakti, to Narayan. He's worshipping Narayan, following rules and regulations, everything very pakka. I mean, he's a ragatmika, engaged in Vaidhi Bhakti in the Leela. But his worship of Narayan is very pak externally, but his mind internally is somewhere else. Krishna. Krishna. Like my Gumaras likes to say, we may be worshipping the deity externally, but our mind is somewhere else. Not Krishna. Somewhere else. Nanda Maharaj is worshipping Narayan and his mind is somewhere else. Krishna. So that somewhere else is correct. They will pray to Narayan, please protect Krishna. They will worship Narasimhadev, please protect my love. So whatever worship to God, it all converges into their affection for Krishna. And even if for a moment the possibility that Krishna may be God comes to the surface, for the Vrajavasis, that only increases their particular bhava to Krishna, their intimacy to Krishna. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives that example in Raghavarma Chandrika. He says it is like if the mother of a child, the child becomes the president. What is her name?
Her name is Lila.
Lila. Imagine that.
Liliana Lila.
Okay, imagine if her becomes the president of the United States someday. I don't think you expect that, and that's okay. But let's use.
Nice.
Okay, yeah, of course. So, if the mother, the father, the parents of Lila get to know that, it's not that they will start to treat her like, oh, now you are the president of the United States. Oh, my pleasure to meet you, and some distance. No, you will, your Vatsalya will overflow. Oh, now my baby is a president. You follow my point? It's not that the fact that she is so great now, it creating a distance. That's not happening. On the contrary, the affection you have increases because of the greatness of the person. So similarly, if in Vrindavan someone just hears maybe Krishna is God, which is generally not the narrative, but some rumor may be there, for them it will be just increase their, no? Like when Uddhava told that to Nanda, maybe your son is God. He said, even if he's God, first he's my son. Second he's God. Try to imagine that psychology. He may be God, but that's secondary. First he's my son. And since he's my child, I have to educate him. I don't want him to be spoiled. So, and in the context of educating him, I may have to chastise him. And I will do that if that's necessary. And he may be God also. He can be all that he wants, but first he's my son. So that's the type of psychology we find in Vrindavan, which is very, very unique. When Aishwarya comes to the foreground, Madhurya, intimacy increases. Like when Krishna is lifting Govardhan Hill. That's a very overt expression of Aishwarya. Until that moment, everyone in Braj have heard, Krishna killed this demon, Krishna did that, Krishna did this. But they heard that. They have not seen that with their own eyes, most of them. But in the Govardhan Lila, everyone in Braj were seeing that. And they could deny this extraordinary thing. A boy of a few years lifting this great heel for a week with the smaller finger of the less powerful hand. I mean, that's pretty Aishwaric. But the Brajavasis were never thinking, oh, maybe he's God. Brajavasis, Yashoda was feeding Krishna. You eat something, you may be hungry of lifting this heel so many days. Eat something. And Krishna's friends will go on to him and tell, you must be tired at that point of lifting the heel. So give the heel to Sridham. He's stronger than you. He defeats you every single day on wrestling. So give the heel to him and take a rest and we can massage your arm for a while. So my point is, when Krishna is showing all this Aishwarya, all the Vrajavasis are just increasing their respective sense of intimacy. So that's a very unique type of psychology we find there. So no matter what you put on the way of a Vrajavasi, their intimacy for Krishna will grow. Be it Aishwarya, be it Madhurya, it's always increasing. Like this famous Leela where Krishna is with the gopis in Rasa Mandal and he disappears and gopis start to run and look for him and Krishna disguises himself as Narayan. He can do that. He's Narayan is one aspect of him. So he appears as Narayan and the gopis are running looking for Krishna and they suddenly find Narayan on the way. Try to imagine this. You are running after Krishna and God appears in front of you. So it's God. God is there and it's like appearing, like offering blessings. What do you want? And the gopis only had one single question in mind, which is, oh Narayan, you are God. So you are, that means you are omniscient. You are sarvajna. So do you know where is Krishna? And that's the only question we have. And Narayan was like, Narayan, quote unquote, he was like, oh my gosh, I mean these Braja Gopikas are unique. I mean, I'm God, I can offer so many things, and the only question they have to ask me is, where is Krishna? And Krishna is choked up in chamatkar, in astonishment. He doesn't know what to say. So the gopis look at themselves, Narayan is not replying, let's continue looking for Krishna. They continue running and leaving God on the way there. No? And Krishna's wondering, like, what's this Braj about? And they love me so much. It's too much. And of course, all this that somehow we find in the Brajabhas in different degrees is play out in the highest level and expression in Mahabhav Sarupini Sri Radha. She's the very embodiment of Brajabhav, if you want to put it like that. And of course, this has its implications. Krishna is only living to reciprocate with his devotees. So imagine if someone like she has that particular attitude. How that will react in Krishna? So Krishna is only living to reciprocate with his devotees. That's basically his job. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is mentioning that. Krishna says, Satyakare, Jai Magi Britya, Britya Bancha Purti Vino, Nahi Anya Kritya. He says, whatever a devotee wants, whatever a servant wants from his master, in this case referring to Krishna, Krishna will grant that. Why? Because he has no other duty apart from fulfilling the desires of his devotees. That's what Krishna Das Kaviraj is saying. Britya bancha purti binu nahi anya kritya. Krishna has no other duty apart from fulfilling the desires of his devotees. That's the God we worship. Someone who is constantly reciprocating in love. So the question here is, okay, the Brajavasis are giving themselves to Krishna in such a way, so how Krishna reciprocates in kind? Again, there we are going again back to Gaur Lila gradually. For example, with Brahma, in the famous Brahma Stuti, after the Brahma Vimohan Lila, Brahma starts to pray to Krishna. He expresses so much surprise about the Braja Bhav. Aho Bhagyam, Aho Bhagyam, Nanda Gopa Brajokasham, Janmitram Paramanandam, Purnam Brahma Sanatanam. He says, how wonderful it is that you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, but these Brajavasis are relating to you as friends. I mean, you are behaving with them as a friend, relates to a friend, although you are Purnam Brahma Sanatanam, the unlimited eternal truth. So Brahma is like astonished by saying this. You are such a personality, but you relate to them on equal terms, like friends. Who are they? What's their position, basically? And who are you in this unique feature? What other reward other than you can exist, Brahma is saying. And interestingly, then Brahma is presenting a further overwhelming question for himself. He's asking Krishna, how will you reciprocate with the Brajavasis? Because, for example, you reciprocated, quote-unquote reciprocated, to Putana in a very unique way. She approached you trying to kill you, and you gave her Vatsalya Bhav. So that's totally out of the norm. I mean, you want to kill Krishna and he's sending you to Golok. That's pretty merciful. So if you reciprocate to her like that, Brahma is saying, I wonder what you will give back to the Brajavasis. They are giving their own life to you totally. So if you have reciprocated in this way, if you have given yourself to Putana basically in this way, how will give you yourself to the Brajavasis who are giving themselves to you in such a way? So Brahma is asking that to Krishna, how you will reciprocate with them. And Krishna is not replying at that moment. He's thinking about that. What to do here? I mean, the Brajavasis are loving me to such a degree. How will I reciprocate? I don't know, Krishna is saying here. At this point of the Leela. This is Brahma Stuti, chapter 14 of the 10th canto. So he's silent. Krishna is silent for a while. He becomes introspective. How can I reciprocate with the Brajavasis, especially with Sri Radha, who loves me in such a way? So Krishna's reply to Brahma's question will come a few chapters after that, in the very zenith of the Bhagavatam, which is the Rasa Leela, Rasa Panchadhyaya. I won't describe in detail, of course, the Rasa Lila, Rasa Panchadhyaya. That will take a few lifetimes to enter into the details of that. But Rasa Leela, as we know, Krishna is calling the gopis on Sarapur name. Gopis came. Krishna sent them back home, interestingly. Although he's using crooked language, so many things are being said there. The gopis choose to stay. They have their arguments for that. That's called the Pranaya Gita. And eventually Rasa Leela begins. The first part of Rasa Leela begins. And Krishna disappears from his scene, as you know. Gopis are running after him, eventually finding these pairs of footprints, two pairs of footprints, and eventually finding Sri Radha being left by Krishna himself. Mm. But in the context of all of this, of course, they have established how Sri Radha is the topmost worshipper of Sri Hari. Anaya radito anunyam bhagavan haririshvara and so on. And how Krishna is surrendering himself to Sri Radha. No? Rasa Leela is the zenith of, the Bhagavatam is the zenith of all revelation, and Rasa Leela, Rasa Panchadhyaya, is the zenith of all of the Bhagavatam, basically. Mm. So in this Rasa Leela, what we discover is the object of worship of God Himself. That's a very unique idea, a very unique contribution from Gaudiya Vedanta. Radha is the object of worship of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada will say, all religions teach us God is the most worshipable object. But we teach who is the most worshipable object of God. God is in the altar, but who is in God's altar, if you will? Sri Radha. So, technically speaking, that's our goal. Our goal is not Krishna. Our goal is Krishna Prem. I mean, we don't want Krishna without Prem. Our goal is Prem. Our goal and Krishna's goal. I mean, Krishna is there, of course, Krishna is Krishna. But the nature of Prem is always increasing. So you can always attain more Prem. So it's always an ongoing goal for him to attain further experience of Prem. Or to speak to us who have no Prem. So our Prayojan is Prem. Prem Prayojan. Krishna's goal is Prem Prayojan. Everyone is running after that goal, Prem. Everyone is mad after love, God Himself included. So in this Rasa Leela we find God Himself is bowing down to the feet of Sri Radha. Dehi pada palavamu dharam, Ajaya Dev Goswami narrates in Gita Govinda. Krishna is putting His head at the feet of love personified, if you will. Showing the supremacy of that. I always remember one, Sri Bhakti Sarup Sridhar Maharaj, he likes always to quote one verse from Prabodhananda Saraswati, Radha Rasa Sudanidhi, Rasa Gana Mohana Murtim, Vichitra Kili Mahatsavola Ashitam, Radha Charana Viloditam, Ruchirasi Khandam Harim Bande. Which is a pranam mantra for Krishna, but the whole credit is going to Radha in that pranam mantra. Because in that mantra, Harim Bande, we offer pranam to Hari, and the verse says, who is rolling at the feet of Sri Radha? Basically, who has a peacock feather, but the peacock feather is full of the dust that comes from the feet of Sri Radha, and Hari is just rolling at her feet. So pranam to Hari. It's in a very like charming, tricky way, Prabhupada Saraswati Thakur is glorifying Sri Radha while offering pranam to Hari regarding he's at her feet. And that's the, I remember Sridhar Maharaj say, and that's the God we worship. That's the Krishna we worship. Because there are many Krishnas, many conceptions of Krishna. Our Krishna is rolling at the feet of Radha. That's our deity. And of course, as we will see, Mahaprabhu is all about this. So, going back for a moment to the Rasa Leela, we are there, Rasa Panchadhyaya. Remember, Krishna abandons the gopi with some purpose in mind. Krishna abandons Sri Radha with some purpose in mind. He hides behind a tamal tree. No? Camouflage himself with the tree because similar hue. So he becomes tamal Krishna, as we know. No? Camouflaging with the tamal tree. While the gopis who find Sri Radha being abandoned by Krishna join her and they begin to perform sankirtan, if you will, in separation from Krishna. Viraha kirtan, we call gopi gita. Jayati te dikham janmana braja shrayat indira saswadatrahi
Daita drishtam dikshita bhukash Dvaidrita savash Tvam vichimbate Saradudasana.
So on. I don't want to be tempted to that direction. Sorry?
We'll get lost.
Yeah, lost and found. So Gopi Gita is there. So this is a high point of the Rasa Panchadaya, Gopi Gita. Gopis are making their heart, led by Radha. Radha is leading the kirtan. Her heart is blossoming in separation. While Krishna is witnessing all this camouflage behind the tamal tree, basically. So it is said that at that point, this is the highest point of Krishna Lila, Braja Lila. Krishna is disappearing from the Rasa Mandal with some thoughts in mind. He's thinking, okay, I love my gopis, and when I love someone, I would the best for the one I love. What's the best thing to give for someone I love? That they love may increase for me. If you love someone, the best thing is may your love increase. So Krishna thought, their love will increase in separation. So I'll disappear. I will disappear so their love increases. And that's how I show them my love. You have to understand the logic of love, if you want to put it. It's a logic of its own. And also he thought, in separation they will sing and express their hearts in such a way that the whole world would witness that and realize the depth and the charm of the gopi's love, and it wouldn't be misunderstood. So he disappeared with these purposes in mind, but while witnessing the kirtan of the gopis in separation, a new purpose came to Krishna's mind, which was, when seeing Sri Radha's blossoming in separation and tasting something that he doesn't know of, a third desire came to his mind. I want to taste that. I want to taste what Radha is about, and I want to see me from her perspective. So this is the highest point of the Krishna Lila, and in this high point we could say Gaur Lila is being born. I mean, Gaur Lila is eternal, but we can connect in time how the Krishna Lila is unfolding to the point of it's taking us to Gaur Lila again. So at this point also comes, remember that Brahma asked this question to Krishna, how will you reciprocate with the gopis? So Krishna is reappearing after Gopi Gita is finished. As you know, Krishna reappears with his pitambar on his neck like a criminal. That's the mood he's appearing back there. Tasama vigrabhuk chori smaya manamukambuja pitambara darakshakvi sakshat manmata manmata. In a very unique, enchanting way, like the Cupid of Cupids, he's reappearing. And he will declare, he will reply to Brahma's question. He had thought about that. How will you reciprocate with the gopis, this Brajavasi, especially this gopi, especially this Sri Radha? And he will have to break his promise, his vow. He says something in the Gita, Gyatamam prapadyanti tam stataiva vajamiham. He will contradict himself in the Bhagavatam. What Krishna says in the Gita, he will say something different in the Bhagavatam. Because in the Gita he's saying, as you approach me, I'll reciprocate. But now Krishna is appearing in front of the gopis and he will say, I cannot reciprocate. You love me so much that I cannot reciprocate, basically. I'm so much, so many people is loving me and I'm reciprocating with so many people, but you only love me. You are fully dedicated, concentrated in one single direction, ekantik. But I'm so much divided into so many devotees. So I don't find a way to reciprocate with you, basically. Actually, Krishna is saying to the gopis, Shishi Guru Gauranga Radha Govinda Ji Ki Jai. Krishna is telling the gopis at this point, what to speak of not being able to reciprocate with you? I cannot even conceive how much is the debt I have to pay. I'm realizing I have a debt of love with you, but I cannot even conceive how much do I have to pay. What to speak of being able to pay? You know, I mean, in order to pay a debt, first you have to know how much is the debt. But Krishna is saying, I don't even have a clue how much is the debt. So what to speak of paying that? Every time I try to conceive how much is the debt keeps increasing. The numbers keep, your love keeps increasing, basically. That's the nature of the gopi's love. The more Krishna's beauty increases, gopi's love increases to serve that beauty. And by him receiving their service, his beauty increases. And his beauty increases and their service disposition increases. And Krishna's beauty increases. And so on. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that. And the two of them engage in a competition in which none of the two accept defeat. Krishna's beauty is increasing, the gopis' love is increasing, Krishna's beauty is increasing, the gopis' love is increasing, and that has no end. And that's the world we want to enter for eternity. So basically Krishna will say, there comes a very famous verse in the Bhagavatam, Napariham nirabhadya samjayam sa sadhu krityam vibudayu sapiva jamavajan durja ragiha shrinkala sambrishya tatva pratyatu sadhana. Krishna is saying to the gopis, I cannot repay my debt of love with you, even if I try for a day of Brahma. That's quite some time. Actually, your love is so, you have renounced everything for my sake, and your love is so noble that let your own love for me be its own reward. That's the conclusion of the Bhagavatam. Love is its own reward. Love is the very goal in itself. And if we read this verse between the lines, as we should, because all the verses in Shastra are to be read beyond the literal meaning, there are so many layers of meaning there, and our acharya have shared that. Srila Sanatana Goswami, in this case, in his commentary on Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he's mentioning that actually in this verse, Krishna is saying to the gopis, even in a day of Brahma, I cannot repay my debt of love, but nonetheless, once every day of Brahma, I will try. I'll try my best. I know I won't be able to be successful, but I cannot just remain not doing anything. No, I have to do. I will try. And I will descend as a sadhu. I will try to make devotees for you. I will try to experience Radha Bhava. I will try to experience your perspective. And I'm not able to pay back, but I will try to pay back somehow. I will chant your glories, Krishna is saying to Radha. I will make devotees for you. And of course, who is that person? Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. And so in this verse, which is the zenith again of Krishna Lila, Sanatana Goswami is revealing, here Krishna is sharing with us, I will come as Gaur, as Mahaprabhu, as Gaur. So Gaur Lila is born in the apex of Krishna Lila. So in this way we can also see, remember, we started our lecture, and sorry if I'm extending a little bit, we started the lecture mentioning Gaur Lila gives us Krishna Lila. Krishna Lila is the gift of Gaur Lila. But now we are getting to the height of Krishna Lila, and we are realizing Gaur Lila is coming as a gift of Krishna Lila. So there is place for the two of them. The two are givers, the two are gifts, interestingly. So the two things can be seen. In this case, we can see Gaur Lila, the most, again, ultimate gift, or the most natural extension of Krishna Lila. Remember the verse that we say today of Sarvabhauma. The deeper you go in your service to Radha, the more you increase your love for Gaur. And of course, this is not downplaying Braja Lila, as we were speaking yesterday. Now, when we are singing the glories of Mahaprabhu and Gaur Lila, we are not downplaying Krishna Lila, because technically speaking, the two are the same. As Krishna is not different from Gaur, Krishna Lila is not different from Gaur Lila, technically speaking. And that's a very, very important art to learn, basically. When you are glorifying something or someone, you have to do it in such a way that everyone else is properly glorified as well. Although it seems that you are glorifying that as the highest of the highest. For example, if you studied, some of the works of Prabodhananda Saraswati, there are three main works, I would say, Chaitanya Chandramrita, Radha Rasa Sudhanidhi, and Vrindavan Mahimamrita. So in one of these works, Chaitanya Chandramrita, Prabodhananda Saraswati will glorify Mahaprabhu extremely. It may seem like fanatical how he glorifies Mahaprabhu. So you may think, okay, for him Mahaprabhu is the all-in-all and that's above everything and so on. And yes, but then you go to Radha Rasa Sudhanidhi, and he will start to glorify Sri Radha in the similar way. And then you go to Vrindavan Mahimamrita, and he will glorify Vrindavan. Like, this is the only thing you need. So if you see all these three works, you have to understand he's saying all those things at the same time. Although it seemed at one point he's only glorifying Sri Radha, only glorifying Vrindavan, only glorifying Mahaprabhu. he's glorifying all of them. Everything else is glorified. So it's not an easy art, but it's very needed, very required. How to nicely and deeply glorify something in a way that seems that's the all in all, but that's not excluding or downplaying other aspects of that same reality, if you will. So let me conclude with a few words in connection to to Gaur Lila as the gift of Krishna Lila. We just have shown how Gaur Lila can be born in the apex of Krishna Lila. So now we are back in Gaur Lila. We began in Gaur Lila, we went to Krishna Lila, and we are back in Gaur Lila again. But not from the perspective of Gaur Lila as a mere means to Braj, but as a destiny, as to itself. So there is a concept in connection to Gaur Lila, and it says that Gaur Lila is called Parishishta Lila. Parishishta Lila. Parishishta means appendix. Not this, the one here, but the appendix of a book. A book sometimes have an appendix, which is kind of an, how do you say in English, like an afterthought, which kind of concludes the book. You say everything in the book, but the appendix will like make the full circle, if you will. So Gaur Lila is considered the appendix of Braja Lila, if you will. No? Or the Lila that makes Krishna Lila complete, as we mentioned yesterday. Where you find Krishna in his most upgraded version, if you want to put it like that. Like when you have your cell phone and you need to download some app, because if you don't download the app, it's not operative, it's not working. So Krishna Vrindavan is feeling something is not working here. I need to download my the best possible version of myself. He appears as Mahaprabhu. And now it's working again. Now everything is flowing again properly. And that's what I like to say, that if we want to think of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as we should, as Srila Prabhupada described him, we can, if we consider Mahaprabhu is an upgraded version, I mean, it's Krishna himself in this unique moment, we can speak of Mahaprabhu as the Supreme Personality of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Krishna. Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Mahaprabhu is Swayam Bhagavan. Something like that. Now, in the words of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, Mahaprabhu is considered Paratattva Simha. Paratattva Simha, which means the highest limits of the Absolute, basically. Where the Absolute is reaching this especially extended point of experience, especially upgraded version of itself, if you will. So as we mentioned yesterday, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, his Mangal Charan, is describing gradually unfolding how Mahaprabhu is Paratattvam Simha, someone who is Krishna tasting something he has not even tasted in the Braj. Srila Gaur Govinda Maharaj likes to give he shared one expression from Narahari Sarkar, who is Chaitanya Bhakti Naipunya, which means Mahaprabhu represents the last limit of bhakti. Krishna himself tasting something who has not been tasted before. Sometimes Gaur Govinda Maharaj also gave the example of a green mango and a yellow mango. So the green mango, of course, is the unripe mango, and the golden mango is the ripe one. So when he was asked, he will say the difference is that in Gaur, rasa is ripe, and that's what golden. The golden mango, the golden lord. Rasa is ripe there. In Krishna, rasa is unripe yet. Something remains to be fulfilled, which happens in Gaur Lila. So in Gaur Lila, in Gaur in Mahaprabhu, in the form of Mahaprabhu, we can find this unique, ultimate expression of rasa. Like if you want to give one for further illustration, I imagine those at least who have been in India, you know about this, when you are in Parikram, let's say now the Mandal Parikram, and it's quite hot, and you need to drink something, and they have these little, how do you say, machines to squeeze. Sugar cane processing machines, whatever. And you put once, and you put a second time the same one, and a third one, and you try to squeeze out as much juice as you can. So we can give that example with the Absolute, if you will. So if you put the absolute, the sugar cane absolute on the machine, the first juice that comes, you have Bhagavan Narayan. And you say, no, but you can squeeze more. Put it again. Okay, Ramachandra comes there. Some further sweetness, some further juice is coming. I say, but you can squeeze more. Again, one more time. Then you have Dwarkvidish Krishna coming. But you can squeeze more. Okay, you put again. Mathuresh Krishna. You say, but you can squeeze even more. I'm paying for this. Please put it again. More juice is there's potential more juice there. So you put it again and comes Braja Krishna. And someone says, I think we can try one more time. And one last time. So you can squeeze more. And Gaur Hari Mahaprabhu is coming. As we mentioned, that's where the mellow, the rasa is, the experience of rasa is fully ripe, fully extracted, fully experienced. As we say yesterday. Golden is the new black. Gaur is the new sham, this most upgraded version of the absolute. So again, Gaur Lila, Gaur Lila, Krishna Lila, please keep in mind we are speaking about one same absolute reality. There is no duality here. We are not speaking about two different people, two different places, but one same absolute reality expressing itself in different modes. My Guru Maharaj likes to compare Krishna Lila and Gaur Lila with a reversible jacket. He will say, it's a reversible jacket, has black sleeves and golden. The jacket is golden but with black sleeves, and you turn the other way around and it's golden sleeves and black jacket. Similarly, Gaur Lila, Krishna Lila, the ingredients are the same, but they appear in different proportions, if you will, different expressions. But we are speaking about the same thing. But different devotees will find different levels, degrees of affinity towards one or the other. See, Thakur Bhaktivinoda mentions that in his Jaiva Dharma, for example. He's mentioning those who have affinity towards Krishna in a more exclusive way, they will go to his realm. Those who have affinity towards Gaur and Krishna, they will go to the two of them, if you will. And they will obtain a particular form of service in Golok Vrindavan and in Golok Navadvip, interestingly. So there is a place for it, or those who are equally attracted to the two of them, more to one, more to the other. There is place for all this. And in the words of of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he will say, every devotee will feel that their affinity for Bhagavan, their particular feeling they have, is the best, and everyone is right. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, in a very sobering, mature way, every devotee will feel my connection with Bhagavan is the best, and everyone is correct. Now, there's no need to fight and try to convince others, my is the only one, and so on. And there's place for subjectivity. So just to conclude today's katha, I think they're offering bhog now. So there's some...
a few minutes.
Okay. So we have some...
We have to one.
Oh, okay.
You can ask.
No, yeah, question. Yeah. I'll conclude one word and then we can open if you have any comments or questions. So we can conclude saying that Gaur Lila is like the solution to Krishna's dilemma, if you will, in Braja Lila. Again, Krishna in Braj wants to have a particular taste, a particular experience. But he realizes, I'm not able to taste that. If you want to put it in some words, there is some lack of adhikar. Krishna in Vrindavan, he wants to taste something, but he feels, I'm not able to taste that. So I need to increase my adhikar to go through that. So Swedi Kari Janista Saguna Parikirtita. Bhagavatam is saying, to acknowledge your adhikar, that's real beauty. To know where you are and where do you want to be, that's a real virtue. So Krishna is going through this same process that we as sadhakas, in our own way of course, are going through. He realizes, okay, I'm here in the Braj, I'm who I am, but I would like to be there. I would like to taste that. I need to increase my adhikar, if you will. I have to upgrade my condition. And that will come only by Radha's grace. Krishna can only taste Radha Bhav by her grace. Sri Radha is the teacher, if you will, the guru of Krishna, as it is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita. She's the dancing teacher of Sri Krishna. She has her friend Vidyalaya, or her dancing, lovingly dancing school when Krishna is a student there. He says that in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I'm a Sisya Guru Nath Adhikar Premam Nath. I'm a student in Radha's dancing school. Her love is my dancing teacher, basically. And by her grace, I'm dancing so many dances for her. So Krishna's Mahaprabhu will engage in sadhana to obtain the particular kripa, the particular grace that he needs to obtain in order to experience what he wants to experience. And he wants to taste something very specific, so his sadhana has to be very specific. So in this way, Krishna, as Gaur, becomes a sadhaka, interestingly, to attain his ultimate perfection, to attain his ultimate prayojan. Prayojan, as we mentioned, that's the goal of life for him as well. So Krishna will attain this ultimate goal by the grace of Sri Radha. And who is Sri Radha in Gaurlila? Who is giving herself fully to Krishna, as we said the other day? Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit. So, again, Gadadhar Pandit, Gaur Gadadhar, is a whole different lecture. And to enter into the details of how Sri Radha is giving herself to Krishna in the form of Gadadhar in Gaurlila, that will require a separate lecture altogether. So that maybe we may try to address some of those points next class, next Saturday. So I can put the discussion to rest here, and we have some minutes in case anyone would like to share any questions, any thoughts before finishing.
Prabhuji,
whom?
Prabhuji, there had a question.
Yes, Pranam.
Pranam, thank you so much for the wonderful class. So, thank you for explaining us. Now we have the understanding of the how the Rajavasis feel, how, you know, for them Krishna is first, and then, you know, God is a secondary aspect. So the question is, maybe I have two questions. The question is, when we practice and we learn, we come from a place of ignorance to first understanding the Aishwarya aspect. So it's not that, you know, Krishna is born in my life, and now I see him as a personal aspect, or is Krishna to me. First is God, and then I have some understanding of the personal aspect. Maybe except for, you know, those Nitya, you know, Nitya Sadakas or
Nitya Siddhas.
Nitya Siddhas, they come from there.
Mm.
But we are here, and like we see, we have the Aishwarya aspect first.
Mm.
So will that ever be converted, or like...
Hopefully.
That's, or the question is, will maybe Krishna is in disguise?
Mm.
Or in an appearance. I was reading about Markandeya Rishi, and he's meditating, and Narayana appears to him as Naranarayana. Two personalities. Is everyone has a different form, and suddenly and Advaita Prabhu is appears Mahaprabhu for Advaita. For Advaita Charya. So it, Krishna comes in a special form for each one of us, although we are meditating on a certain.
Okay. Yeah. That's the first question.
Yeah, two questions. Is it even possible to be go beyond Aishwarya for someone who started that way? And the second, like, how does Krishna appear in different form for different devotees? Prahlad is Narasimha, Markandeya Rishi, Narayana, Advaita Acharya, Mahaprabhu,
different avatars.
Avatars, yeah. Or,
okay.
But there's none different
personalities.
Okay. So, yes, of course, what you mentioned is very important. Of course, I was sharing how the Brajavasis are seeing Krishna, and in the context of Raga Marga or Raga Nuga Bhakti, ideally we are eventually to follow in the footsteps of the Vrajavasis, but that doesn't mean to imitate them in the sense of I'm like if I will be already there, because in order to properly enter into the follow into the footsteps, first we have to get acquainted with Krishna's divinity, if you will. I mean, that's the whole point of the Bhagavatam. Even the Bhagavatam itself is not speaking to us about Krishna Lila right from the beginning, but is making its case gradually, first 9 cantos, then Krishna Lila. But in the context of doing that, it's saying Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. It's speaking Krishna is God, if you will, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we need to learn how Krishna is God. And if we learn that nicely, someday we will forget that. That's
still
the point.
Yan, right? It's not, it's
sorry?
Not, it's still Gyan. It's theoretical. It's not...
Yeah, Gyan, but not... That's Sambandha Gyan, basically. Not Gyan in the ordinary sense of the term, if you will. But Sambandha Gyan, which is the knowledge about who Krishna is, who we are in relation to Him. And Sambandha Gyan is Bhakti. Technically speaking, now you have Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. So, Sambandha means the knowledge about who Krishna is, who we are, what's our connection with Him. So, to know how Krishna is God, that's not something merely like intellectual, if you will, but that's an aspect of bhakti in itself. To hear about that, Shravan, to speak about that, Kirtan, so that's bhakti. Smaran, to absorb our minds in that. So, my point here is that. Of course, as part of our education, so of course, as sadhakas, in the situation in which most of the sadhakas are in, they need to learn that Krishna is God, as to not misinterpret the whole lila. Because if not, you may think Krishna is an ordinary boy, the Vrajavasis are ordinary people, and they're engaging in immoral affairs. I mean, many people misread the whole Krishna Lila by not having this proper Aishwarya foundation. By Aishwarya, I mean, because Aishwarya can mean many things. No, Aishwarya, one of the aspects of Aishwarya is I'm aware that Krishna is God. That's one type of Aishwarya. Aishwarya also means the majesty of Vaikuntha. Also, Aishwarya applies to that. But in this case, to know that Krishna is God, yeah, that's a form of Aishwarya. And interestingly, what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions in Raghavarma Chandrika is that the experience of Madhurya, and Madhurya here I do not mean romantic love, Sringar Ras, I mean just the sweetness of Vrindavan in general, the intimacy of Vrindavan. It can be all considered Madhurya. So the experience of the Vrajavasa, this Madhurya, it needs Aishwarya to be in the background. If you don't have Aishwarya, you cannot have Madhurya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. What's the meaning of this? The point is the following. If you feel attracted towards Krishna as a child, that's considered madhurya in the sense of intimacy. Now, you can be attracted to your baby, to your child, but that's not technically called madhurya. Why? Because your child is not God. You follow. But in the case of Krishna, He's God, and despite His God being God, you are attracted to Him as a child. So that's what's actually considered madhurya. No? The intimacy of Braj is you are attracted to Krishna as a boy, as a friend, as whatever, but He's God. But no matter He's God, you are attracted to Him in those specific terms. No, that's madhurya in a more generic sense. Okay. Yeah, madhurya ras will be the romantic relationship specifically, but madhurya means generally sweetness. In a general way. So in Vrindavan, this sweetness is with every inhabitant there. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes this point. Everyone is attracted to Krishna as a friend or in whatever rasa there are, but He's God. But nonetheless, on top of that, they're being attracted like that. So, and sometimes that Aishwarya comes to the foreground. For example, when you have, I don't know, let's say Rupa Manjari. In Vrindavan. When Rupa Manjari comes in Gaur Lila as Rupa Goswami, how much knowledge does Rupa Goswami has about Krishna being God? I mean, volumes and volumes are written by... So he knows that Krishna is God. It's not that he doesn't know.
Isn't he, in the spiritual world, he's... What's his eternal form?
Rupa Manjari.
So he knows everything.
Mm-hmm. But in Vrindavan, that knowledge is not required. It will get in the way of the relationship. Srila Bhaktirakshatadev Goswami gives the example of... He said this like 40 years ago. So he says, the United States, at that time at least, I don't know now, he said, is the most militarily powerful country in the world, he will say. And he said, so the country has lots of tanks and, how do you say,
missiles
and all this type of weaponry, but you don't see all of them like parading on every street, and because that will be like disturbing for your normal life and interaction. But you know that's there somewhere. And if someone will attack the country, all those things will appear. They are there, but they are not necessary. That will be disturbed the daily interaction. But when that's required, all that comes. So he will say similarly in Vrindavan, all that knowledge about Krishna's being God is there, but it's not necessary in the interactions of the Leela in Vrindavan. But what that's required, when those same people come to earth, like Rupa Goswami, to establish the Sampradaya, all that's required, all the tanks and missiles of knowledge and vairagya come to the foreground. But in the dynamic of the Leela, that's not required. And that's why it seems they do not have knowledge. The inhabitants of Vrindavan seem uncivilized village people, basically. And they do not seem that renounced. They seem attached to their house and cows and family. But when they appear in Gaur-lila, sadakas, wow, so much renunciation they have, so much knowledge they have. So the point is, all those things are there, but they are buried, as I like to say, under layers and layers of intimacy. No? So in Vrindavan, all knowledge is there, all power is there, all Aishwarya. I mean, there's more Aishwarya in Vrindavan than in Vaikuntha, in terms of majesty. Well, for example, when Krishna showed to Brahma, unlimited Narayans coming from him. That's pretty Aishwaric. I mean, generally the abode of Aishwarya is Vaikuntha, when you find one Narayan. But in Vrindavan, Brahma saw unlimited Narayans coming from one single little Krishna. So that's much, much more Aishwaric than what you find in Vaikuntha. But interestingly enough, Krishna showed that only to Brahma. He didn't show all that to his friends because that would be disturbance for the Brajavasis. So he just gave that darshan to Brahma. He wanted to teach him something. So the point of that section is actually in Vrindavan there's more Aishwarya than anywhere else. But that's not required for the mood of the Leela. Imagine, in Vrindavan every tree is Kalpavriksha, every cow is Kamadenu, the dust is Chintamani. That's pretty Aishwaric. So many things can be obtained through all of them, but the Brajavasis are never thinking about asking anything. That's the real opulence of Vrindavan. It's not that, oh, the trees are Kalpavriksha, cows are Kamadenu, dust is Chintamani. We can ask so many things, but nobody's thinking about asking anything. They only will ask the trees, give me a fruit so I can offer it to Krishna. And they don't even need to ask. The fruits already are inclining, bending and giving the fruit. So everything is operating in that dynamic. Sorry, you have some...
So it just seems kind of like, how do you become like that? Like, how do you become like them where you are, like, not thinking about yourself? Like, how do you become that way where you don't have your own self-interest? Because it just seems like, it's like, you know, we could pretend that we don't have a self-interest, but we have a self-interest. Mm-hmm. We all do. Everybody here. Mm-hmm. Why are we here? You know? Mm-hmm. So how, it just seems like a catch-22, like, how can you, like, I don't have any interest, but I do have interest. So it just seems like we should be empty, right? Mm-hmm. And just want to serve, but the truth is that we have self-interest. So how does that work? Hmm. I'm sorry, but I don't even know if it makes sense what I'm saying.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm sorry.
I'll reply the question and I'll try to reply and you let me know if I understood the question, because I think I understood, but I always open to not understanding many things. That's important. Of course, I will say that it's very important that we are sincere and honest about where we are. No? And this is not here. I mean, an ashram is not to make a pretense of I'm totally transcendental, I'm free from ulterior motives, and here I am. Of course, we will like to make our will one with Krishna. That's why we are here, hopefully. But that's a work in progress. No, it's not something that we will attain in one moment. Surrender is not something that it comes in one shot, if you will. No, Diksha in itself, Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Diksha kali bhakta kari atma samarpana. Diksha is initiation, and it is said there, at the moment of Diksha, when you make of yourself a full offering to Krishna, and so on. So the point is, Diksha means, strictly speaking, you are offering yourself totally to Krishna. Now the question comes, I am there already or not? And the question is then, is Diksha completed or not? In the way of, you can think of Diksha as a process. Of course, you have received from Srila Gurudev mantra and so on, but what do we do with that? That's up to us. We have to do our part as disciples. It's not just, okay, my Gurudev is a Param Mahabhagavat and that's glorious, but what you are doing with that? Now, you can have the greatest personality as your shelter, but you have to take the shelter. You have to do your part as a disciple, and part of that means acknowledging, okay, where I am now, but where I want to be also. No, the two things are important, equally important. Because if we emphasize too much, I want to be there, that's the ultimate goal, I want to be that, great. But you have to be realistic and acknowledge where I am now. And the opposite is also problematic. If I only get identified where I am now, and I don't have this like eternal prospect about what I would like to become, it can be discouraging, because you can just think, okay, I'm here and I have these limitations and these anarthas and that's all I have. No, that's not all you have. There is such a bright potential that is such a bright prospect that is in your life. So we have to acknowledge where we are, and I am not telling you where you are. You have to do your homework. I have to do mine and you have to do yours as well. That's to be a sadhaka, means to remain honest and sincere with ourselves, not to make a pretense of bhakti, because we don't want to cheat ourselves anymore, basically. We have done that for so long, so many lifetimes. You want to put an end to this type of hypocrisy. I want to be as sincere as I can, even if that takes to acknowledge embarrassing things, if you will. That will be glorious, if you will. Not like Vishwanacha. I was speaking the other day, Vishwanacha Kavartakur, in his Madhurya Kadambini, he describes all the stages of bhakti, if you will, all the stops in the journey, if you will, from beginning to the ultimate goal, and all the different points in between, so we can have like a map. Okay, I'm here, I want to reach here. And when he describes anishtita vajana kriya, which means instability in bhakti, and he mentions six symptoms. I won't enter into the details now of that, but I'm always joking with the devotees when I share them. I say, okay, you raise your hand if you feel identified with this one. So I say, what's all my ear? Everyone's like, yeah, okay. The second one, okay, I'm there. And of course, those six symptoms may be a little embarrassing, because they speak about, I don't have very mature faith, I'm going up and down, I have the tendency to enjoy the fruits of bhakti for myself, I cannot keep all of my vows. But at least I can ascertain where I am in the journey. And Vishwanatha Kavarti Thakur says, and those symptoms, as embarrassing as they may be, are part of bhakti, are one stage in your bhakti journey. So they are glorious, because they are not the ultimate goal, but also that's happening in the context of bhakti. So bhakti has come to your life, and the whole process has begun, and part of that means some embarrassing things will come, but that's not the end of the story. No, it's not just, I have these ups and downs, but even those ups and downs are happening while practicing. So follow my point. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is kind of saying, that's embarrassing in one sense, but that's glorious in a higher sense. So that's a glorious embarrassing. We were speaking the other day with one devotee. The expression was, that's a charming disaster. You may look at yourself and say, oh my God, I'm still a disaster. But it's a charming one. Because Krishna has come to your life, Gurudev has come to your life, so much mercy is knocking on your door. Yeah, you may be a disaster on so many things, but so much glorious things are coming. So do not lose sight of that part. Because that's, at the end of the day, that's what will win. No, the mercy that is coming. As I like to say, no matter how many anarthas you have, you can bring all your pile in front of me and tell Maharaj, I have all this. You put them all together, and we can put all of our anarthas together, all of us together. It doesn't compare, with the potency of bhakti, with the grace of Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu's grace is way more powerful than all our anarthas put together. So try to have some hope in that connection, especially in those days that you feel like some cloudy day, no? Like, I'm not very special, I don't feel very, very inspired today, I'm very fallen, whatever. Still Mahaprabhu's grace is coming. Still Mahaprabhu remains, no? Still Krishna is playing the flute. It's not that you open the curtain and Krishna threw his flute, so like, I'm tired of calling you. And like, no? It's not that Sri Radha stopped giving blessings. It's like, no more blessings today. No. They keep giving blessings. They keep calling us. So we should get some encouragement, some inspiration from all that. No? So.
I was just going to make a comment that, I mean, no matter whether we're in this material world or the heavenly planets or even higher, I mean, we're always going to face diversity. We're always going to face difficulties. Mm-hmm. You know, Krishna's always testing us at all. Even all the great Vaishnavas, mm-hmm. and Acharyas and all of them, you know, we look at, so they have to face so many, you know, like Srila Prabhupada, two heart attacks, you know, just coming, so many things.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in all, Krishna is always testing us in all aspects, you know, at all different levels.
Mm-hmm.
So, that, I think that's something always will be there.
Yeah.
All the time. And then look at Lord Indra, for example. He's always getting in trouble.
Mm.
And so many other.
Mm. And of course, that's a good point. Of course, the thing is how we go through those obstacles, of course, because a neophyte devotee and a very advanced devotee may be going through the same obstacle externally, but of course they will deal with that internally very differently. So yeah, I agree that it's not that you advance and no more problems, no more obstacles. Probably they will increase. but your appreciation of them will be totally different. So you will be like nourishing yourself from that so much. And we see that from, I don't know, the Goswamis. All of them want to join Mahaprabhu. Sanatana Goswami was really longing to join Mahaprabhu. He was put in jail. Raghunath Das Goswami wanted to join Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu told him, you remain at home for a while. Gopal Bhatta Goswami wanted to join Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu said, take care of your parents. So it seems like Mahaprabhu himself is telling them that. But they are so sincere that all those so-called obstacles are just increasing their longing.
Right, because their advancement.
Exactly.
But they're still always there.
Mm-hmm.
Even we see Arjuna, how many, even Krishna is right there by his side, which we don't have the luxury of, but still he put him through so many trials and tribulations, so many challenges.
And I think that's helpful, because that helps us to show where we are also. I mean, we need to be tested so we know where we are. If you are not put to test, you may have an idea of, I am this and I'm here and I am there, and a test comes and shows you where you actually are. I mean, not to get discouraged, just to know, I really want to know where I am. I don't want to cheat myself thinking I am here or there on this or that. I want to know where I actually am, so I can really, from that point, know what to do to be where I want to be. But first I need to clearly know where I am. So Krishna sends some test to show me that. I like to take Kunti's prayers in that spirit. You know, when she seems to be asking for suffering, it's not that she's a masochist or anything like that. She's asking, send me trials and tests, and that will make me closer to you. Because that will, yeah, show me where I am and what do I need to do so I can be closer to you, and so on. So I think we as sadhakas should, in a sustainable way, again, not go neurotic with this, but should develop some taste for this, you know, some sincerity that I will pray to Krishna so he shows me where I am, and I'm willing to accept that, you know, and not to be in denial of that reality. So sometimes we may fail in that, sometimes we may be successful, and we keep trying, work on progress again. And the grace that Krishna sent to us is so special that even if in this lifetime we cannot reach the ultimate goal, no rush. That's an important point also. Once one devotee asked Srila Siddhar Maharaj, if I begin practicing bhakti in this lifetime, which we don't know, how many lifetimes will it take to reach the highest goal? And Srila Siddhar Maharaj said, 2-3 lifetimes. And the devotee was shocked. Like, 2-3 lifetimes? Like thinking it's too much. And Srila Siddhar Maharaj looked at him and he was shocked. Like, is that too much? He said. After unlimited lifetimes of wandering into this world, and in 2-3 lifetimes you can achieve this highest of the highest thing, is that too much? So as you want to say, I'm embarrassed having to pay so little, actually. So the more you appreciate how deep and great is the goal, the more you will be willing to pay whatever price it takes. And you will always feel, I'm actually not paying anything for this. I'm embarrassed to pay just this. You have a question? You raised your hand.
Yeah,
well, a while ago, sorry.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah.
You know, the hope comes, you mentioned hope, and for me the hope comes from looking at, you know, day one when I got a book, or the first time I went to a temple, I'm like, who are they? You know, Lord Jagannath. What is this all? You know what? And how is everybody standing here for hours just chanting, looking at this curtain? You know, so I look at, that's how I was, you know, day one to where I am now, which I just know a lot more. There's no taste really for chanting for me, but I'd love to hear Hare Katha. So, you know, and when I'm hearing, like, Gaur Lila, and she would mention the self-centeredness, it's almost like positive self-centeredness in a way, because I can see myself, you know, relating to Jagai and Madai, you know, like, oh, Lord Chaitanya, you know, Nityananda came and is saving people and, you know, who are full of intoxication, can't focus, cheating, you know, all of that. So I relate to Gaur Lila, where, you know, as far as Krishna Lila goes, it's like hard to listen to the pastimes so much because, you know, I just can't relate, like, to the demon unless I, you know, like, whirling, you know, whoever, Bhaktisaur, you know, that those are hard to relate to. It's like watching sci-fi movies, I have no attraction for. You know, it's like abstract or it's not real to me. But then I have to look at the way I can identify the demon is that, oh, they're all bad defects of character. You know, and Krishna's killing that. So I, you know, spend time trying to relate, putting myself, you know, in a relatable situation with all of the...
But that time for you, I just wanted to mention, I thought you were going to ask a question. No, there's a comment.
What are you
talking about? Never mind. I thought it was a
you
question.
Have a problem?
No, no, it was a comment.
I'm making a point, and he can pull, you know, a comment out of it, maybe to, you know, should we all just ask like you do?
No, just do what you want. I'm not trying to. I just thought it was a question.
So regarding your commentary, yeah, I appreciate your point that we should keep the process relatable because if it's not relatable, we will basically start to feel this is not for me, basically, or I'm not for this. No, maybe the process is beautiful, but I feel so much like falling or whatever the case that, oh, this is not for me. And we shouldn't feel that, of course. No. We should keep the process relatable, and that will require some skill from ourselves as sadhakas. Now, in different stages, what makes the process relatable is not the same as in day one, in day 108, after 20 years, we need to update, if you will, how we can connect with the process in a way that remains relatable in our particular situation. And the example you gave is a good one. Like when Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself, he described all these demons that Krishna killed as different anarthas. No? So, of course, that's a way of making those pastimes very relevant to our situation as sadhakas, and not just to think, okay, that's a nice story and the demon is flying and he was killed like that, but actually that's me in one sense. No, I mean, that's speaking about this particular tendency that I need to be to uproot in my heart, and so all these other things happen. So all these other leelas take place, as we know, no? That Rasa Leela and Rasa Panchadhyaya, all of these confidential leelas come after so many demon killing before, no? So we can have this type of approach to Shastra, no? Not necessarily taking the literal meaning, but there's an interpretive level, layer of that, no? And it's also an esoteric level to that, no? For example, these are three ways in which different devotees will understand Shastra: Kanishtha, Madhyam, and Uttam. Literal, interpretive, and esoteric. And all of them are perfect according to where we are. An example is this famous verse in the Gita, which says about what's night for the wise is the day for the unwise, and vice versa. And so literally, you can say, that's the meaning. The wise is awoken at the time of the day in which the unwise is sleeping. The wise wake up for a Brahma Muhurta, let's say, and the unwise is coming back from night party at that time. That's a literal application of the verse. A more interpretive version is awaking and sleeping doesn't literally refer to that, but they are aware of something internally, the wise, and the unwise is sleeping to that reality in their consciousness. You follow my point? Mm-hmm. That verse can be interpreted in that sense. The night and the day as referring to what we are awakened to or distracted from. And the esoteric meaning, you can relate that to Leela, and you can speak about, I don't know, Sri Radha. And for Sri Radha, day is night, because when the sun is coming, it means she has to separate from Krishna in the Nikunja Mandir after spending all night with him. So for her, the day is, what was day for some is night for others. No, so for Sri Radha, for many people, day is day. For her, that's night. And for her, the night is day, because night is when she will meet Krishna all night in Rasalila. So the same verse can be explained and understood in all this level, like literal, interpretive, esoteric. And there's place for all of that, depending the situation of each one. Yes?
This is a comment.
Yes.
When you were mentioning that Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur said Krishna, he was offering his obeisances to Krishna, whose peacock feather is rolling in the dust.
Yeah.
At Sri Radha's feet. It reminded me of a time that some wealthy person was offering a silver murti of Krishna to the devotees.
It was silver what?
A silver murti.
Oh, murti.
Deity of Krishna. To the devotees, and they asked Srila Prabhupada, and he said, I think they didn't accept the deity. He said, we Gaudiyas worship Krishna, who is the property of Radharani.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.
Small comment.
Yes. No problem.
We know the goal is to surrender.
Yes.
But I'm so far away from that point.
Welcome to the club. You are not alone in that.
So I think one thing that we should develop is humility. Knowing we're so foreign, and as you said, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is just giving the mercy to the falling. So have that faith and pray for that. And eventually it will come. We don't know if it's going to come tomorrow, in a year, 20 years, in two more lifetimes, but you know it's going to come. But it's because you have to have faith in the promise of Lord Chaitanya. I have to learn how to chant without offenses, but I'm humble enough. I am like the third verse of the Shisha Sakha. Devoid of offense, of course, prestige, class, classing, ready to offer all obeisances, respect to others. Do we feel lower than the strongest tree, more tolerant than a tree? So that's not easy to develop. But we have to have faith that if we try and if we pray, eventually it will come. It will come.
Thank you so much. This third verse of Sikshastakam that was just quoted is for us so crucial. I mean, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, he said, if you want prem, you have to chant Harinam following that verse. In one sense, that verse is more important than the Maha Mantra. Because that's the attitude to chant the Maha Mantra. If you don't have the attitude, Maha Mantra may attract something else, if you will, or not. But if that third verse, Srinada Pisunichen and so on, is there, that will warrant all success. And of course, what's your name, sorry?
Sevia. I met Sevia. Costa Rica.
Okay.
And the grandma in his house.
Yeah, yeah. So Sevia said, this is easier said than done. I mean, we can speak about surrender and humility, and it can just, we can be rendering lip service to those ideals, but we have to really walk the talk. No, my Guru Maharaj likes to, there's a saying in Bengal that they say, oh, when I heard about the Prem Dharma of Mahaprabhu, I immediately wanted to join, but when I heard the third verse of Sikshastaka, I thought, oh no, this is not possible. But we shouldn't feel like this, that's the point. No, we shouldn't get discouraged, or we shouldn't try to jump over that verse because it's difficult for us. On the contrary, that verse speaks about nishtha, which is the goal to attain for most of the devotees at present, like the immediate goal to attain from anishtita bhajana kriya to nishtha, to fixity. So yeah, humility and surrender are like the foundation to our bhakti project. Now, if you don't have surrender, if you don't have humility, Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say, without surrender, without humility, bhakti is just imitation. Devotion is imitation. It's just like a show. And we don't want to make a show. Again, we have been making the show for so many lifetimes. And we don't want to make this show in the name of bhakti. That's the worst possible thing we could do. Use bhakti to keep the show going on. We want to enter another show, which is the lila, if you want to call it a show. But that requires stopping all falsity, stopping all duality, and trying to be as honest and sincere as possible. Yes, Arjun.
No, Maharaj, I was just thinking on the question of Prabhuji is asking about Ashraya, and I think some devotees, you know, at the beginning, I also thought like we might be speaking out of our adhikar sometimes or hearing something like that, but it's actually so beneficial to hear these high topics because it reminds us of the actual gift the Mahaprabhu was giving, like you're spending this whole two classes now. Mm. And so, but again, you think of Mahaprabhu, okay, I never met Mahaprabhu, how can I feel that gift comes, right? But we have met Srila Gurudev, we have met our Acharya, Srila Prabhupada came. So that makes us, hearing these things and what they came to give, makes us feel like appreciation. And makes us feel like, there's really how fortunate we actually are. So if in that mood we can actually think how fortunate we are, we might drop a little bit, one tear, and then we're done. Mm. Right? Mm. So that's the easiest way to, I think I found myself like that, you know, because I'm not practicing correctly, I'm not doing many things, I'm doing so many apparatus. But when I think of what Gurudev has come and given me, he knocked on our door in Alachua. He came here. He came here so many years after year, you know? And he gave us these gifts, and we can't really comprehend what he has given us. But just a little thought of, oh, Gurudev saw me, I saw Gurudev, and he's given us this, then if a little tear comes, that's enough for me.
Mm.
Then eventually one day I will try to understand what's the actual gift.
Mm.
You know? So
mm.
I just wanted to just share that, because that's it's my only like hope, you know.
Yeah,
that's all, that's it. So Srila Gurudev is our connection to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mahaprabhu and Krishna and Srila Radhika.
Srila Gurudev ki jai. So we are ready for aarti?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll put the discussion to rest here, and we will continue next weekend. Thank you so much for your presence, time, questions, commentaries, and so on. Srila Gurudev ki jai. Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Radha Govinda ji ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Bol.